production. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
What's up, guys, and welcome to hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday, because it is Wednesday, and it's Why It Ended, and this is very weird for me because I am staring directly at my co-host, Matt Coon. Why am I staring at you, Matt?
This is the worst thing ever. I'm looking at the face of Brotox right now. Of course, you're listening.
It looks good, doesn't it?
It's fantastic. I got it. It's fabulous, and I'm just saying. But for those of you listening to us on Why It Ended, of course, thank you for tuning in. But we're starting to record these on video now, so you might get a chance to see Robbie's lovely face and my ruggedly handsome face very soon. But last week, we had a great episode. We had Bull Dempsey, an old friend of yours that you actually were in the varsity club with.
Yeah, well, I love having guys on that I, you know, have connected with earlier in my in their career, because I kind of was there for a lot of their stories, so I could really kind of feel it. So it was cool having him on, listening to his story, and hearing that he's in a good place now. You know who else is in a good place now? Our guest today, which is...
Well, today we have a great guest who is Daniel Pewter. Now, What do you know of Daniel Pewter, Robbie E.?
Well, I know the whole situation with Kurt Angle, that what he tapped him out or made him submit on net live worldwide television. And I also know that he's a badass, and he's kind of he doesn't really have a filter, does he?
No, and maybe that hurt him. We'll find out. And I think it is exactly what this show's about. Last week's show, Bull Dempsey, is also exactly what our show's about. If you didn't listen to that, give it a listen. Let us know what you think. He's a great guy, young guy with a huge future. And it did kind of end. We want to find out why. But, of course, you check us out on whyitended.com. Our YouTube is Where It Ended. And also, for our Patreon members, they might get a sneak video peek at this episode before anybody else. Sign up today and go ahead and support our show at patreon.com/whyitended. But today we have a great episode. We have Daniel Pewter. I'm really looking forward to it, Robbie.
Yeah, it's going to be good, and I think it's kind of going to kind of be a expect the unexpected, because who knows what kind of mood this guy's going to be in.
Absolutely. Now, my dog's barking in the background, which tells me it's time to get to Daniel Pewter on Why.
Why? It. I'm trying to say it together.
Oh, let's say it together.
Let's each other. I'm ready on three. One, two, three.
Why?
Why?
It ended. Okay. We tried. That was terrible.
I was a teacher. Hey, guys. So by now, you know about one of our main sponsors for the show. And I know you might be a little embarrassed to talk about it, but
it's our friends over at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now, I don't know about you, Robbie, but my hands are important to me. I play guitar and I play music. And I type a lot. And so maybe for those of you who maybe want to take care of your hands or protect your hands or save you the trouble, you can go to StopUsingYourHand.com.
And listen, bro, there's no need to be embarrassed. It's all fully private. Any order from Pleasure Products USA comes in plain packaging with nothing indicating the contents, guys.
And you know what? Give the hand a rest. You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com. And if you go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo, enter the coupon code FISTBUMP, and you can get a free stroker.
And remember, guys, no worries about getting found out, because your credit card statement will not reflect that an adult product was purchased, so you're in the clear.
Now, StopUsingYourHand.com's premier product is called the 3V Starlet Stroker, and it's got a ton of features that you might not expect, you know, such as, you know, a real voice coming at you, or maybe a little movement in an unusual way. Where can you go? You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo. Use the coupon code FISTBUMP for your free stroker. StopUsingYourHand.com. So guys, as you know, thousands, tens of thousands of wrestling fans listen to Why It Ended every single week, and a lot of them are within that 25 to 44 year old age bracket that advertisers love to reach out to.
So this is your chance to advertise with us, Robbie E. Matt Kuhn, on one of the hottest podcasts in professional wrestling history. And all you got to do is email whyitendedmail@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking.
If you have a wrestling type event or wrestling related product, or even just a product that you think would appeal to our audience, please give us a holler. Give us an email at whyitendedmail@gmail.com. And you can get an ad as awesome as the one we are doing right now. All right, guys. So you're joining us for our very first video interview. And we're going to see how it turns out. But we know the interview is going to be great because we have one of the kind of the most interesting stories in recent wrestling history. We are joined today by Daniel Pewter. Daniel, how are you doing today, man?
Perfect, brother. Thanks for having me on your first video broadcast you guys have made for TV, so I freaking love it. Beautiful human.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? We've been going 6 months with this podcast, and things have been going great, but we never wanted to do video because have you looked at the picture on your screen? Have you seen my co-host, bro?
Oh, my God.
Like, look at him. Like,
beautiful.
Like,
thank you.
Well, beauty's on the inside and on the outside, Robbie.
Your heart.
So, Daniel, man, what was it like growing up for you? Where did you grow up, and were you a wrestling fan when you grew up?
So, I grew up in Cupertino, California, Northern California, San Jose, San Francisco area. Super blessed to grow up in that area. Nice home, great family. Used to go over to my buddy Kyle Kingsbury. You might as well know Kyle Kingsbury. Fought for the UFC. He was one of my best friends growing up. And would go over to his house and watch Raw, watch SmackDown. So it was a lot of fun. I really liked characters. I loved superheroes, and I always wanted to be a superhero.
Like, and wait, this is what, like high school time, kind of?
High school, middle school, yeah, exactly. So a lot of fun. I enjoyed wrestling. You know, it wasn't something where I had to watch every week, but I enjoyed watching, different people. I loved Hulk, obviously The Rock. Al Snow is a fan, definitely. And it was great because he coached me later on. Ric Flair was awesome. Steamboat was one of my favorites. I loved his wrestling style. So he wasn't as, like, out there, I think. But he was one of the most technical wrestlers. I really enjoyed watching him.
And you were athletic. You did a bunch of sports. But at some time, you kind of started training to be a professional wrestler. Why did you start training to be a wrestler?
So, amateur wrestling, I started when I was 13. Then I started MMA when I was 16, after I got out of juvenile hall. And one of my really good friends and mentors is... you're really smoking on the wrestling show. I love this. Okay, cool. One of my best friends, Dave Meltzer. I don't know if you know who that is.
Okay. Well, how are you? You were best friends with him back then?
Yeah. When I was 16, he became like one of my mentors. So,
wow.
Through Frank Shamrock, who was a 6-time UFC champ.
Yeah.
So Frank used to go over to Dave's house and watch all the fights over there when I was So it was just great. I was around Dave, and then one day, I was really focused on MMA. One day, his wife and him, I'm over there, and they're both like, you need to try out for Tough Enough, and you need to wrestle. And I was super focused on MMA, and I was like, really? You think I could, you think so? And so I trained for it. I actually tried out for Tough Enough. Nobody knows this, which is crazy. I tried out for Tough Enough 3 on MTV. And I made the final, and they did a background check, and I was going through, this is good. I like getting all my stuff out on this.
get it all out, man.
I got my house raided at 19 years old by the feds because they thought I was a large drug dealer. And so I'm glad I've never told this anywhere to any media, so this is good. You'll probably phrase this as Pewter got his house raided 19 by 10.
I'm writing the headline right now. Yeah, I'm writing it.
That's awesome. I'm good. It's all good. So they raided my house, and I had a court case that was coming up. It got dropped, and it went away because obviously nobody ever found anything, and there's nothing to find, and all this stuff. That's not the whole story and not the whole truth, but that's part of what I'm going with today. So actually, that is the truth, but not the whole story. So it's pretty interesting. So they did a background check. I had a potential felony drug possession charge. I think it was a misdemeanor, actually, they were going after me with because they couldn't find anything. So they just tied me in. So they were like, we can't have you on Tough Enough 3. And I'm like, come on. We dropped in like a week. So that didn't happen. So then when Million Dollar Tough Enough came around, I sent a video in. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's pretty funny. My brother filmed it for me and edited it. And I was like frolicking. I cut a promo. And then I showed up to this Tough Enough, and I made top 50, made top 8, obviously. But before I made top 8, my promo was the worst in the world. Have you guys seen it?
I'm sure I did years ago. I just don't remember.
The only reason I got on and made top 8 is Big was like, you see that girl down there on the beach? Go get her and bring her back to the ring. And I'm like, okay, I can go pick up a girl. So I sprinted down there in front of the cameras. I'm like, please come with me back to the ring. And I need help so that I can win. So she came back, and they were like, why'd you come back? She's like, because he's cute. I'm like, thank God every day. So,
when you guys were all doing that Tough Enough thing, like all trying out, was there like a lot of egos and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, right? I mean, I saw these big, swole mofos that would, you know, they're like 320 pounds that would come in, and they would be like, guys were going to the hospital when they made top 50. I mean, they were literally, they were pushing so hard. I had the second fastest time on the first day for the obstacle course in the sand, and the second day the obstacle course was double length, and I was the fastest there was. But my like bench press was like, you know, I mean, these guys came in at like 300 pounds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. But I was such a good fighter at that point. I mean, I wasn't ranked super high. I was 20-0 amateur, 1-0 pro. But you know, I mean, is I trained with the top fighters in the world, so I knew how to train properly. But I didn't start really pro wrestling until about maybe 6 to 8 weeks before that, where I started training so I could get ready for it. I did all amateur wrestling and MMA.
The friendship with Meltzer is interesting to me because, you know, he's known as, you know, the preeminent wrestling journalist pretty much of all time. And a lot of people don't like him. Most people do like him. I subscribe to The Observer. I'm a big fan. I met him at StarCast. At the age of 16, you become friends. At the age of 16, you're in juvenile hall. What's the relationship there? Were you a troubled kid and these guys like Frank Shamrock took you under their wing, or what was the situation growing up with you?
So I was the big boned kid, as they would call it. And they had me in special ed classes when I was younger because my comprehension level is about, I don't know, half, a third, a quarter of what my reading level is. So I can go read, but it doesn't make sense. So I have to read it like 5 times, and the words when I read out loud, they don't make sense. So I was picked on consistently throughout school, like laughed at, teased, and nobody ever taught me emotional intelligence. Nobody ever taught me how to love myself. People would say love yourself, but what does a kid know about that? You know, they're just telling you to love yourself. At 16, I got into a fight. I beat a kid up. He said some stuff. He was hitting on one of my buddy's girlfriends and like messing with her or something like that. And then I stood next to my buddy. He went and told the athletic director, and I'm a put this out there too, because I've never talked about this. This guy's name is Mr. Matheny. He was the athletic director. He told me to go fuck myself, literally, for 20 minutes. The worst athletic director in the world. Glad I'm getting some stuff out today. Good. I'm a little amped up. I'm surprised. He's like a county superintendent or like a principal now. Like, the amount of people that he's screwed over that I know is ridiculous in life. So, athletes and everything else. So he's the worst guy in the world for kids. And so it's just crazy to be able to see how somebody that can literally take their ego out on a kid and tell them to go screw themselves. And I did absolutely nothing. And so this kid's walking around talking smack. I get into a fight with him one day. I whoop him. I end up whooping pretty bad, obviously. You know, I didn't even start training MMA yet. And then I next day the cops show up and they knew it was me. So I went to juvie for a weekend, probably about 2 months later, something like that. And then I got out and I was lost to a certain extent, like subconsciously. Consciously I was fine, but subconsciously I was super angry, pissed off, but I didn't understand, again, my emotional intelligence and how to use mentors in life and how to really create a vision or purpose. So, and how to build my team of people. I was hanging out with some crappy people, some good people too. And then from there, I met these coaches. My buddy, I forget his name. I think it was, no, it wasn't Matt. One of my buddies was going to AKA and said, "Hey, I went here. You should check it out." I said, "Okay." So I show up and first week they gave it for free. And after that, it's like $100 down and $150 a month, right? So I go home and I'm like, "Mom, Dad, I need $150. And they're like, "Well, we just spent $6,000 on your lawyer." And so I went back, and the first thing my dad taught me at 12 years old is he rolled up his sleeves, took me to his company that he owned, and he rolled up his sleeves and taught me how to clean the toilet. So I went back and I said, "How can I clean the toilets, wash the mats? What can I do for you guys to be able to get a free membership because I need something?" And Javier Mendez gave me a free membership for 10 years. And him and Frank was one of my coaches, but Hav was the owner of the gym, and he saved my life. Like, he brought me into a family that cared for me, that showed up for me. It beat me up, right? But they pushed me mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually to really create results in my life. And because of them, I stayed out of trouble. I stayed on track. And now I'm the man I am today, serving a bunch of kids around the country and changing lives.
That's awesome, man.
Meltzer was a huge part of this. If it wasn't for Meltzer giving me an obituary book of 12 dead wrestlers when I was before I went to WWE, I looked at it, he signed it, and I go, "What is this for?" And he goes, "Most of the guys die, and it's just, you know, he was heartbroken over some of his buddies dying." And the first question I asked him, I go, "Why?" He goes, "You get your highs and lows, go on the road, you're away from your family, drinking is hard, drugs ties into it, you want to fill the void, the fulfillment." So I said from there I wouldn't drink or do drugs. And for like 7 or 8 years, didn't touch anything.
You know, fast forwarding now, you send the tape in to WWE. You send that, you know, the promo that you talk about getting the girl. I remember it now. And you get the call that you've qualified to be on TV and be part of the first kind of broadcasted Tough Enough on SmackDown, the $1 Million Challenge. What was it like when you first got that call and you knew you were going to be part of this thing on SmackDown?
Well, I was actually picked out of the first, like, to make the first 50, absolutely stoked. They said I had the best promo video that they saw throughout every video. So I was shocked that I made the best promo video because I didn't look at myself as having a ton of personality, I guess. I was never recognized for that.
And that's so funny because you said you made the best promo video, but yet when you actually did your promo, you said it was the worst one, right? Like when you were there.
Yeah, so I made the best like promo video to send them, and then they were expecting this great promo, and then I I picked up the girl. But I think I was like, when I made the top eight, I was so, and it was in person down in Venice Beach. I felt alive. And I'm rethinking this right now. I felt alive because it was something that I put 100% into. I literally dropped out of college for this. And I put 100% of my effort. I actually went to the hospital training for it about 3 weeks before because I was so dehydrated. I was doing double days. I was going to college. Like, I was pushing it. And literally, when I left to go to Venice, I didn't go back to school. I mean, I showed up to get my stuff, and that was it. But just super blessed. I mean, I look back now, and it was one of the biggest life lessons I've ever had, in the 37 years I have now.
So it was eight finalists, and then they brought the eight of you on the road to do live Tough Enough. Is that how it went?
So it was tape delayed. We filmed on Tuesday, aired on Thursday then. And we stayed in Connecticut. Well, I was the only one that actually stayed there. So all the other guys, after Tough Enough, went away wherever they went. They went home for a day or so, and then they came back. I was the only guy that stayed in the hotel that showed up to the WWE headquarters gym on the day off that we had. I mean, I was super committed. And it's interesting because I committed 100%. And whenever I commit 100%, like anybody I know on something, like what you guys are doing with this or in wrestling or career, whenever you put that effort into, my podcast, for instance, made top 100 within 3 months in the country. You know, and last week it was like number 16. And so it's just interesting to be able to see that when you commit to something, when I commit something, I get the result because I put my
absolutely.
Blood.
Absolutely. That's the problem with everyone. I mean, God, we could go on about that forever, but so many people aren't all in. I mean, everything, if you want to be the best, is 24/7 and putting the work in. And oh God, that's a thing when I teach wrestling seminars or things, that it's a whole nother world, man, of frustration of guys that don't want to put work in.
So I look at it as what's the value in it for them. And so I find that there's five major things that they don't get the first four. First one is vision. Most guys don't have a vision for their life. They don't believe it. They see it a little bit, or they want it, but they can't actually visualize themselves. Second one is purpose. So why they do it. A lot of them want to do it because they want to get famous or be cool. A lot of guys join MMA or pro wrestling because they want to emulate somebody else instead of be themselves. And so if they were just to connect to that, and I had a kid a couple days ago, he's expelled from a school, coming to my school, and 2 days ago on Wednesday, yesterday actually, and he said, I go, why do you want to be a CEO? You want to be a CEO? And he goes, I want to be able to take care of my family financially. And that's the purpose, right? Third one's mission, showing up, just doing the moves, doing the training, doing the whatever. Fourth one's the team, getting you as a coach, you know, setting it up. But the last one's the hardest one, and it's the commitment and follow-through to be able to really get the results you want. And so I find that, you know, the first four, if you don't have the first four, the fifth one's never going to come because you're going to be lost. What are you going to commit to? I'm going to commit to, like, when we drive somewhere, we use GPS. If you don't have the GPS and the understand why you're going there, you're not going to go.
Exactly. You hear that, Matt?
Yeah, I'll try. You know, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised, Robbie. I kind of live by that myself. And something to talk about, of course. You know, every time you do a wrestling interview, we're going to talk about this, but let's take a little different slant on it. From 2008, you know, it's 2018 now. We're looking back at 2004. We interviewed Jim Corderis not that long ago, who was the referee in the ring when Kurt Angle did the challenge, that ended up being a shoot challenge with a couple of you. You come in, you lock in a Kimura. You're on your back. You weren't letting go. Corderis counts 1, 2, 3. Angle's upset. Everybody's upset. What was your understanding going into that? Was your understanding was it a shoot with submissions allowed?
So they stated no striking. Everything else goes. So what would you, like, specifically, that's what he said. So what would you think about?
Specifically with your skill set, right? Because you had a skill set where you had some real submissions. And in 2004, UFC wasn't, it was hot, it was new, but a lot of that knowledge wasn't common. So maybe they didn't realize the extent of what that meant.
Yeah.
They just didn't understand that I was a badass and I would have ripped Kurt Angle off and made him look like a little pansy that he is. I mean, he's a wrestler. This is the difference. An amateur wrestler is not an MMA fighter. And so at the end of the day, he can show up and be all badass and tough. I'm going to beat Pewter up. He's a wrestler. Like, it's called a match. It's not called a fight. Two different concepts, two different worlds. It's kind of like a motorcycle racing a freaking Toyota. He's a Toyota. I'm the motorcycle. Much faster, much leaner, much younger. He's the old man. I was the young buck. He grew up and met his wife, you know, and had the all-American, you know, dream. And so it's like, at the end of the day, I beat him. I kicked his butt. They cheated. Corderis talked about it. He saved his ass, saved his arm, saved his career. I would have taken it that night because it was their rules and not mine.
Hey, Matt, so do you invest money?
You know, Robbie, I never have, but I think you know about this too. I just started using the Robinhood app, and the Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free.
Yeah, it really is awesome because they strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy people. So it works perfect for every human being.
You know, and for me, it's easy to be intimidated to go into the stock market, but it's a non-intimidating way for the stock market newcomers like me and you to invest for the first time with true confidence.
Yeah, it's clear design with data presented in an easy to digest way, which means even Robbie E can understand it.
And you know, if Robbie E is using it, it's easy to use. But what I liked about it is I never know what kind of money's involved in these kind of things. And I guess other brokerages cost up to like charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge you commission fees. You trade stocks and keep all of your profits.
Yep. So you could do what me and Matt did, and you could sign up for free. Zero, zilch, nothing.
And, you know, if you're like Robbie and you need something that's easy to use, it is easy to use, and you learn by doing. You learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. And they have custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest.
So guys, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. All you got to do is sign up at ended.robinhood.com. That's ended.robinhood.com.
For free. You have nothing to lose. Sign up today. ended.robinhood.com.
So real quick, it was supposed to be who was allowed to... Like going into it, it was each of you had a shot to wrestle him. Was that what it was supposed to be?
So we did an up down competition before. So the day started off. First, they had us run sprint up the back alley, like where the trucks drive into the actual arena. They had us run sprint is probably about 30, 40 yards. Then they fed us pasta and milk, challenging. Then they had us run liners. Okay. Then they put us into a ring in front of everybody, and then they had us do up-down. I did them perfect. I smashed every tough enough guy. And then he wrestled Kurt Angle. So at the end of the day, they knocked out everybody when they couldn't do them anymore. Corderis, I think it was, or maybe it was somebody else in there, took everybody out except for Chris Naraki, who then Chris Naraki, because he did them perfect, because they said, the blonde guy. Well, Chris and I were both blonde. So I was doing them perfect, Chris was not, and Kurt knew that. Now, what Kurt didn't know is that my wrestling coach in high school and one of my training partners was Danny Shade. Danny Shade lost to Kurt Angle to go to the 96 Olympics by a couple points. So that's kind of the frame of it. Then Kurt Angle comes over, looks at everybody, but stares me down and says, who wants to wrestle me? And I raise my hand faster. Everybody looks at me like I'm freaking nuts. And I was just with, I had Dan Rodheimer on my podcast, and he was talking about it too. And he was like, dude, you're crazy, bro. Like, so at the end of the day, if they just say no striking, they set the rules. And that's the rules that I followed. And if one of their guys got whooped because they set their own rules, I'll give you an example. I was playing basketball with some of my kids, and they were beating me. Well, how do we win? We reset the rules, right? I said, how about next point wins, guys? Next point wins. And they were like, okay. And I freaking got the next point. So at the end of the day, whoever makes the rules usually wins, but they made the rules and they got their butt whooped.
You know, of course, you're dealing with Kurt Angle. You know, you say he's the old man, you're the young buck, and you have MMA skills, he has wrestling skills, you're in a ring where you can use submissions. What kind of shape was Kurt Angle in? He seemed like he was very intense. He seemed almost a little bit unhinged. He stated that in the previous wrestling match with Chris Norwalki, that he hurt himself and his arms went numb, but... what kind of physical shape was he in? What kind of mental shape? What kind of vibe were you getting off the guy at the time?
So, very intense. And if you look at his veins throughout his muscles, he was much stronger and, very, very intense. So, look, at the end of the day, I mean, look at him and look at me in that picture. Completely different, you know, like, he's a pro athlete, and I'm just an upcoming young buck. I mean, did I have injuries? You know, I was beat up every day, but, you know, I didn't have any serious injuries. I mean, I'd never had super serious injuries except for breaking my hand and, you know, getting dropped a few times. But at the end of the day, it's breaking my nose a little bit, bone spurs. But, I mean, nothing super serious at the end of the day. And, yeah, I mean, he can complain about whatever, but he's the one that challenged me. I mean, how do you go up to a young buck, challenge him, and then say, oh, I'm hurt? Like, that's a freaking wimp move.
So my question is, what was the scene when you guys got backstage?
Nothing. Like, people didn't know what really happened. That's the funny part.
Did you guys interact at all?
No interaction. And you know what's funny is Don Marie, you know Don?
Yep.
So Don Marie, 2 weeks later in the Tori Wilson sex test that we did where we dressed up in suits and all that stuff, she came up and licked my face. And it was for a very specific purpose to piss him off. And so I love, like, that I was being used to get my butt whooped. That it was just interesting to be able to see, to get my butt whooped, like, by everybody backstage. It is what it is. Like, I'm good with it. Like, you know, I don't know.
So nobody said anything to you backstage about that? Jim Cornette describes a scene where Kurt Angle was losing his fucking mind. But nobody said anything, not Jim Cordaris, no agents, Angle, Vince, anybody said anything like, you fucked up, pal, or anything like that?
You know, I mean, there was probably some stuff said, like, you're a dumbass or something, but I don't remember it.
And why was the Dawn Marie licking your face thing so bad? Why did that make him so mad?
I don't know. You got to ask him on that one.
Well, we'll just leave that one there, but... you actually end up winning. But one thing that happened that was, well, first of all, when you're competing with Mike the Miz, Mizanin, what was there any indication to you that Mike was going to be the Miz, the big star he is today?
So the Miz and I, the day that they were going to come vote on us, he was getting like, I don't know, 70,000 unique hits a day on his website, and I was getting less than half of that. I was getting like 30,000, and I'm like, "Holy crap! Like he's gonna smash me." Even though I won every competition except for two of them, I won 6 out of 8 of them, pretty much. I mean, I was on top. So or performed the best. He won one of them that was dressing like a woman. He got first place on that one. So I was okay with losing that one, preferably. I was good with second place. So it was just interesting. We didn't really have a relationship. He always wanted to be as good as me, but he wasn't. I beat him in the mile race every day. I beat him in, you know, I mean, some of the promos were good, but I just outperformed him. And I mean, he would go out and, you know, do stuff and be off track from my opinion. On the weekends or whatever else, nighttime, I didn't drink. I didn't go out. I was, you know, on track. I was dedicated. What's interesting to me is I believe that the company of WWE, they want guys to fit in instead of want longevity on personality a lot of the time. And so I stayed on track and I did what I was supposed to do. I'll give you an example. I just got my first billionaire partner in one of my companies today. And it's because they've seen what I've done and how I perform in my relationship. And I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I stay on track. I'm very vision purpose driven. And I work my ass off. And so I think that anybody that invests, when I find good talent, I want to be able to build them. And so I think that WWE, some of the time, at least with me, I was great talent. I worked my ass off. I wanted to learn and grow. And they gave me an opportunity. I did well, and then how the whole thing ended was pretty crappy, I think, and left a bad taste with the company in my mouth.
We're going to get to how it ended, but of course, you know, it ended up with you winning, in quote-unquote winning, But in that process, you faced The Miz at Armageddon in something they called a Dixie Dogfight. Now, I just watched this again. Was this a complete shoot? I mean, was it a real boxing match with The Miz and you?
Yeah, I think it was 1 minute rounds. I think it was, or maybe 2 minute rounds. I think it was 1 minute rounds. And it was just super challenging with 1 minute rounds because it's so hard with like 18 ounce gloves or whatever they gave us to do anything. I mean, it's super challenging. So I went out there, I pushed it. I think I slipped once on the ring. And he did well. I was very impressed with how he did. Did very well. But I believe that he got tired after the second round, and third round I did pretty well on him. So, you know, it's, at the end of the day, it's, you know, I'm a better athlete than he is. I'm just a higher performing athlete. You know, now he's a freaking amazing athlete. I give it to him. He's done very well. I'm very proud of him. I give him a lot of credit for who he's become, and I don't know who he is personally and what kind of person he is. But for the athletic side of it, or, you know, the show side of it, into entertainment, I'm very proud of who he's become. So it's not easy to get to that level.
So I guess my question is, you're in the WWE and you're in a real boxing match. What the fuck? Like, that seems very off tone, off. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's wrestling. It's professional wrestling. They take the two guys with the least amount of experience and put you in the ring in a real boxing match. Didn't that seem strange to you at the time?
Yeah, but they wanted to create, you know, controversy. They wanted to create something outside of the box. Our ratings, I heard, in the Tough Enough segment were four times what the normal ratings were.
It was just to see what the hell will happen, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I went back to WWE headquarters after every week, right? Nobody, none of the other guys did. And after the third week, after the Kurt Angle, I think it was the third week, some guy smoking a cigarette out in the parking lot when I'm walking in.
Was it Matt?
No, it wasn't Matt.
Damn it.
And he looks at me, he goes, "You're going to win." And I'm like, "Thank you very much, sir." Like, I thought it was just a fan, right? And he goes, and that's what he said. And I walked in after I won, and he said, "I told you you'd win." And I looked at him, I go, "How'd you know?" He goes, "Because I'm the guy in charge of the vote."
Well, there you go. Take us through the Royal Rumble, how that all went down.
Royal Rumble was, like, horrible, guys. I mean, it was, like, super bad.
Yeah, no shit, right? That seemed like the worst experience in the world.
So my dad was there in the audience. So what's interesting is Hardcore Holly, number one, I would ask him to teach me almost every single week. And he'd bump me around, and he would teach me. And I looked at him as somebody that was helping me grow and everything else. He came out with his book last year, and he talked smack. And I'm like, dude, what kind of human does that kind of stuff to sell some books? Like, you're a shitty human. You're not a good person. Because I went to you, and I was humble, and I worked my ass off. I would build the ring every week. I was the one on Tough Enough to originally ask Al we could build the ring and be a part of it, because I wanted to do what my dad taught me when I was a kid. So when he pulled that crap Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, to me, I was like, you know what? I'll take the beating. You want to give me a beating? But in real life, I'd beat the crap out of all three of those guys. I don't care if it was one-on-one or all three at a time. And so it's just interesting to be able to see how a company can be abusive to a kid that's working his butt off, and they treat somebody like crap. I didn't complain, but it's interesting how companies can do that. And what's great is I'm glad I went through some of these challenges, because my company, I don't have drama. I don't have politics. I don't have bullshit in my company, in any of them. It's like, I'm going to take care of people and create a culture where people want to be a part of the company long term. So I'm glad I went through it. I'm glad I went through a lot of the challenges I have, all of them. So it gives me a different frame of mindset on how I want to treat people in my life.
When you were going out there into the Rumble, did you know that something shady was going to happen, or did you think it was going to be fine?
No, I didn't know what was really going on. I mean, they scripted, they told me a little bit what was going on, but at the end of the day, I was like, whatever, I'll go through it. I'll do what I need to do to to get through it. And you know, so
did those guys talk to you afterwards? Did they thank you or anything? Did you talk about what happened?
I don't remember. The hardcore Holly knock. I got knocked out.
To take people back, if you haven't seen it, we encourage you to look up the 2005 Royal Rumble. Daniel Puter won.
He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you got to know what we're talking about. And, of course, you won. You actually won entry into that Royal Rumble. Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit are in the ring wrestling, and out comes poor Daniel Puter. And you go out, you grab a microphone, you do some talking. They bring you in. They take turns chopping the ever-loving shit out of you. And then all of a sudden, the music rings. Bob Holly comes out. The place erupts because they already know what he did to Matt Capitelli. And, you know, and they're just taking turns chopping you. And finally, Bob Holly, with just a brutal Alabama slam, hitting your head straight to the mat. It seems to me that that kind of thing would not go on today. And I'm sure it sounds like you still have a little resentment at it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't resent it. I'm actually blessed to have it. But, you know, when I talk about these things, like the stuff that I've gone through, I want people to know that I'm thankful and blessed that things happened to me in my life. And I don't stand for that stuff in my life at this point.
And so after that, you've won. You've won $1 million, except the $1 million is $250,000 a year for 4 years, and they have the right to end it after 1 year. You were sent down to, I believe, OVW. How long were you down there, and what was that like for you?
Great experience. Dane Davis was awesome. Probably my most memorable memories were of Heyman coming down and working with me. I really like him. Super blessed he was in my life. Great guy. Like, he's so good at what he does and creating a vision, creating a storyline. So super, super proud of going down there, spending time down there. Learned a lot, grew a lot. It was a good experience. I was down there for, I don't know, I think till October. So like February to October, something like that. Just great learning experience.
And then what was the, so you were in OVW, and then was that the end of your WWE career there? Is that where it ended?
Correct.
Do you know any reason why, or were you expecting it?
So they offered me after the first year. I got a letter in the mail. It was very interesting. That said, you're going to be terminated. We'll offer you $50,000 a year, something like that. And I was like, what? Like, where is this coming from? That was a letter. Stated, I got an offer for 50 grand a year, and they sent me in a letter, which I'm thinking to myself, why would I get a letter stating a new deal when I already had a deal that I agreed to? So to me, it was just off a little bit. Then they talked to me about it, and they were like, hey, the letter went out. We didn't mean to send it to you. So it's interesting on, again, how people are treated within corporations. Like, we work with different companies now and train employees. So I had a higher expectation of how WWE treated people. But after that, I was like, you know what? They really don't treat people good. And that's okay. Or at least they didn't treat me good. So it's pretty interesting to me. But it was good. I learned a good lesson. I was very, very, very thankful for them, for what I did get out of the whole entire deal.
When you look back at that, you look at Kurt Angle, you look at Bob Holly and Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero, and you look back at how you were treated. Those are lessons you carry with you now as far as how you treat people? I mean, do you feel that as a kid coming in, it seems like to me you were not treated the way that you would treat people now?
For sure. I didn't go there to judge people. I went there to be myself and to grow and be my best version of myself. Yeah, it was interesting, but it definitely is a huge blessing because, you know, I got a name out of it. I built a great career. I went back to fighting. I had 7 more pro fights after that. Learned a lot, grew a lot. You know, to be able to put that I won Tough Enough on WWE and stuff, and and I'm an undefeated MMA fighter. It's just it's a blessing to be able to have that opportunity, because most people, they don't have those opportunities. They don't. I mean, me out of like 1 out of 10,000 guys, you know, one tough enough for that one. So it's super blessed, super thankful for everything.
What made you stop MMA fighting?
So I started my nonprofit. I went back to wrestle. I went to wrestle in Japan for an 18-day tour with Shinsuke, who's funny because Shinsuke now is a superstar. He was back then, but nobody knew in the U.S. about him. We tag teamed for I think it was like 16 shows over 18 days, something like that. And when I was 17, 18 years old, he actually came to the States and trained for an MMA fight. And one of my coaches brought him, and so I got to beat him up when I was a kid, super young, and train him. And he was good, but I really pushed it hard back then. So just a blessing to be able to spend time with him. And I started the nonprofit. I got on TMZ. I got on national shows, and I had 10,000 emails plus come in within the first couple months of kids who were being bullied. And, you know, I mean, we even went to one school and with our nonprofit, My Life, My Power. And 6 months later, the principal's like, no, we don't have any bullying problems. And a kid killed himself off the top story of the building. And so there's so much bullshit in our system of education that people aren't even able to recognize that. And I had a stack of problems at a school because I did a really cool event and really figured out what was going on. But it's just, so I just got more fulfillment out of everything that I was doing with the nonprofit side.
Well, believe me, I know that our education system's all messed up. I used to be a phys ed and health teacher at high school. So I mean, I know how crazy and, you know, a lot of people just don't give a shit inside the system.
I got a question. Did you have to register your guns before you walked in?
Like these guns? Matt, bro, see that? Hey, you said you were off air. You said you were going to say three times that I was big. That was only your first time, man.
I'm excited. We're not off in the area.
But we're like, getting to an end, and then you got two more you got to get in, bro. Like
Hey, so when you're, you know, the last years or the last days when you're with WWE, you think you've got a $250,000 contract. You get word that no, it's a $50,000 contract. What kind of advice, what kind of counsel was Meltzer giving you at the time? Was he someone you were talking to about all the shit you were dealing with?
Oh, I talked to him about everything daily. I forget specifically what it was, but I said, what should I do? Should I stay in wrestling and take a crappy deal or go back to fighting? I think he said something like, it's up to you. Like, where's your heart at? And at that point, I loved wrestling tremendously. I loved the entertainment side. But I made my choice based upon how they treated me and what I wanted to be around. And it was a great decision. I mean, all my decisions have been great. Some of them landed me in some rough spots, but it was a great decision. I went back to fighting, and I did really well. I had 7 more pro fights. I whooped everybody. Got to fight at the Playboy Mansion. Got to fight at the HP Pavilion with Shamrock versus Gracie. Got to fight at Ontario in Southern California. I had a great, great career that. You know, overall, I spent about, you know, it was like over 7 years with me becoming pro at 19 and finishing, I think, at 26 or something like that overall, and just really enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun and super, you know, super, you know, becoming from going that special ed kid that was elastic in sport to going to one of the top athletes in the world. It's just, you know, it's a big accomplishment.
For sure. You're only 37 years old. Is there any last match for Daniel Puter, or are you completely done wrestling forever?
I'll do some more wrestling. No more fighting. I would love to have one last series. and I would go to any wrestling promotion to do it. I would love to wrestle Kurt Angle and do a whole series on it. And no hate, no hurt, no pain, you know, but I would love to, I think, spinning it where he could show off where he's a mentor and where he's a real All-American. And we could spin it really awesome. So I texted him last month, and he basically told me to go F myself. But it's all right, because he's got an anger problem.
Was that the first time you spoke to him since years ago?
Yeah. So I said, hey, I'd like to take you to lunch. This is what I'm doing with my kids' programs, and the world needs better role models. And, you know, at the end of the day, I've added a lot of value to my life, and I'd love to be able to take you to lunch and sit down and talk to you. He was like, no, thank you. He's like, no, thank you, not interested. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, at the end of the day, some people don't care about making an impact. And other people really step up to the plate. And hey, I'll take accountability for the whole thing. At the end of the day, if I pissed him off, you know, he let himself get pissed. He doesn't want to take accountability and blame and shame everybody else. You know, that's where he's at. And I'm good with it. But, yeah, I'd even apologize for hurting, you know, for doing whatever. I mean, I really don't. It means enough to me that whatever he needed to clear things, I would do. But obviously, he's still got a lot of pain and everything else, and he's not interested in making a better world. From my opinion, he wants to be himself. And so, I'm hoping that I could do something with him, be a lot of fun, even if it was taking him out to lunch or him speaking for a bunch of my kids, whatever it is, and doing something together. It'd be great to be able to do something.
You know, it's funny you say you do have a few matches left. You'd like to do a series. Robbie told me off air that he's figured out a reversal to your Kimura, and that you can cinch it in as tight as you want. He's figured out how to reverse it, and I think that'd be great to see. What do you think, Robbie?
Bro, I don't even know what a Kimura is. I don't know how to spell that word. I don't. That's totally not true, man. That's totally not true.
Start with a K or a C?
Listen, if I was with you and Tough Enough, I would have been the guy that won the dressing up like a woman's contest. That's the thing that I would have won. Like, you know, that's the kind of wrestler I am. I'll admit that.
Robbie, you win that contest every day.
Up like a woman. Yeah, I've lost to women in wrestling. Trust me.
So, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. What is the name? You've talked a bit about your company, but what is the name of your company? How can we learn more about it?
So it's called My Life, My Power. It's a 501c3 nonprofit where we work with educators, law enforcement, corporations, youth around the country to be able to help them grow and become their best self. A lot of people don't really understand how to build a vision and purpose and their team and put a mission together and commit to their life. So people that want to grow and get somewhere in life faster, I look at life as two options. Either you do or you don't. You know, I mean, obviously, Robbie put his mind to something. He had good people in his life that directed him. He created commitment in his life, and he followed through with his word. And so, you know, getting people like that in my life around me that want to make a bigger impact with a bigger purpose, I mean, we can all go to do the same job. We can be at McDonald's or Burger King or Chick-fil-A. But if we're not there to really be our best self and help customers, if we're there just to take an order to make money, then why do it? Like, find something you're passionate at. So we help people understand how to become passionate, caring, loving, authentic, fun. And, you know, anybody can do it around the country. We have a training. Robbie, I'd love to have you come. It's going to be, I have the dates in my phone, but it's going to be in January in New Jersey. Next week, I speak at the, I'll be there again in New Jersey. I'm speaking at the Atlantic School Board Association Conference in Atlantic City next Tuesday. So I don't know what you're up to, but if you're around, I'd love to take you down if you want to hang out for a day and we could film some vlog and have some fun, whatever else. But
yeah, man.
And I'd love to also have you on my podcast too, obviously, but we could film it next Tuesday if you're around.
Okay.
Matt, love to have you too. You're beautiful. But yeah, they can go to mylifepower.org, danielpeter.com. My podcast is Significance Breeds Success. my blog I do every single week. We're doing a lot with our school right now and how we're changing the education system, how we're bringing a ton of value and how we're loving our kids and really showing them what's possible. And so
what about your Twitter and Instagram?
Daniel Pewter. You go to My Life, My Power. So, you know, just search Daniel Pewter, My Life, My Power. A bunch of stuff comes up. But if you want to see everything we're doing, it's all on danielpewter.com. But we're in this to build a bunch of schools, train a bunch of people. People want to have great relationships. You know, before I recommend to everybody now, if you get in a serious relationship or business partnership, come to one of our trainings for a couple of days. Like, I'll give it to people if they hear on this thing for like $100. Usually it's $2,000. Like, just pay my fee for the event center. But it's really, I want to be able to help people become their best self, because I find that when they do, their life turns out that much better. And so we have some awesome trainers and partners and people who are just changing life. And that's my purpose now, is to change the world. And you guys will see what I'm going to do. It's going to be pretty freaking awesome. I haven't talked about it on anything, and I won't mention it till about 2028. So it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, you talk about living your best life. It sounds like you are, and it sounds like you've come out the other end, and a lot of people wondered what the hell happened to this guy with all this potential, but maybe they don't realize the potential was in other areas, and it sounds like you're fulfilling it. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this interview, and we hope people reach out to you online and find out what you're up to.
Thanks,
man.
Thanks, Robbie. I really appreciate both you guys. You're beautiful. Robbie, you're just buff, bro.
He's huge. He's huge, isn't he? Well, Robbie just said something very funny, and now we are back from our great interview with Daniel Pewter. What did you think of his story, and what did you think of his car?
I said expect the unexpected. I mean, it's kind of like the old school guests we used to have where you think they're going to be mean, but they're really nice, or vice versa. And God, nice guy. I mean, who would have thought someone who is such a badass that tapped out Kurt Angle or submitted Kurt Angle, whatever he did, is now helping little kids and changing lives. Hey, he's changing lives, kind of like me and you, bro.
Man, it's funny. We have changed some lives. And it's funny seeing it on video, because I said, how was his car? Because it'd be funny to see exactly what the scene was around Brutus Beefcake when we interviewed him, or what the scene was like around Buff Bagwell when we interviewed him. But Daniel Pewter basically is he didn't drive while he talked, but we had to edit a little bit because he's literally parked in an airport and then he loses signal. He had to move somewhere else. But I think it turned into a great interview, Robbie.
Yeah, I like listening to him, I'm not going to lie. And a lot of his philosophies are kind of along the same kind of stuff that I talk to everyone about it. My friends, my family, it's just positivity. And just like, if you're not doing something in life that you're happy about, just do something else. And you got to put, and I say it most in wrestling, but I mean it in everything. You got to be 24/7. You got to put in the work if you want the results. And people just want to not put in the work and get the results. And that just doesn't happen.
It definitely spoke to me as someone who has come from where I came from and ended up running a Boys and Girls Clubs places and then teaching thousands of kids how to play music, finding your passion, working with kids, making the world a better place. But we all change the world in different ways, Robbie, and I'm sure you change the world in your own way if you smell what I'm cooking.
You know, dude, it's really getting bad. Like, the Rock jokes, I get it. I look like a guy that's in a video for an upcoming NBC show with The Rock. I get it.
The name of the show is called Titans, I think, and it was tweeted out. And either it's you... I can't say any of the jokes I thought of.
You were talking to Brian Gerwitz on Twitter about this, weren't you?
I finally found out it's Gewurz. It's
Gewurz.
Gewurz. So when I said Gewurz, Brian hit me up and said, no, that's the way Bruce Pritchard ribs me. It's not Gewurz. It's Gewurz. And yeah, I mean, it appears, all joking aside, that of course, there's no mistaking what Robbie E. looks like. I see you in there. I get you can't talk about it. I'm curious to see how it all turns out. But we had a great interview. We're going to keep doing these video interviews. Of course, you know where to check us out. And maybe you can check out the video at patreon.com/whyitended. Robbie, how can people get a hold of you, reach out on social media, or book you for a gig?
Real Robbie E on Instagram, Robbie E Impact on Twitter, Robbie E Bookings at gmail.com. And guys, I know you heard the ad, but take advantage if you want to advertise on our show. We are one of the hottest podcasts going right now. whyitendedmail@gmail.com. And if you want to promote something right now, like a podcast, a wrestling show, a sex toy, whatever it is, we're down to get it over on this podcast. We've done it before.
We obviously, we have no shame.
Have no shame.
But there's a reason why people advertise on our program. We'd love to have you. And we will see you and hear you next week on Wide Ended.
You got to wait. I watch The Bachelor every week.
This is real. Where's Alaska?